Good morning. This is Hugh LaFont, your host for Ideas and Issues. On our program this week, I'm talking with Cecile Fabre, professor of government at the London School of Economics, and we're discussing Thomas Pogge's book, World of Poverty and Human Rights. Cecile, glad to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be here. Good morning to you.
Wonder if you could begin by giving a brief summary of this book for the readers who perhaps missed the last interview with Professor Pogge.
Sure. Well, basically, Pogge starts with the following facts. More than 2 billion people currently have less than $2 per day to live on. And about one-third of all human deaths every year are due to poverty-related causes. Now, if the so-called high-income economies like ours were willing to transfer about 1% of their income towards the destitute in third world countries, poverty would be eradicated. So this is his starting point, and his claim is that we simply cannot justify our indifference to such a state of affairs, which we wouldn't tolerate in our own countries. So the book tries to make that argument. It's a collection of 8 essays, which he has published in the last 10 years or so. Really, again, the main claim is that we are under a very strong moral obligation to eradicate poverty worldwide. So he doesn't simply make a philosophical argument for this. I mean, he also looks at, you know, some difficult institutional questions, such as how should we reform international institutions, which institutions should we reform, and so on. So that is, in a nutshell, is the central claim of the book.
Okay, that's very helpful. I wonder if we can now look at the components of that. The very first part is, why does he think we have this obligation? I mean, he lays out the brute facts. He says that perhaps, I forgot the way you put it, we can't justify our indifference, but why does he think that we, in fact, do have an obligation?
Well, he basically has two points. I mean, the first one is that, you know, as citizens of developed countries, you know, we are complicitous in national and international institutions which implement policies. Those policies are extremely harmful and detrimental to a huge number of people in third world countries. So it's through voting for and electing governments, which, for example, refuse to raise taxes to help the poor, or which impose very stiff trading conditions on the poor in those countries, we play a part, you know, in those individuals' very severe deprivation. So that's the first reason, if you want, he gives for our duty to help. He has another claim, you know, which is that, well, after all, you know, we in our private life do accept that we are not allowed to harm a stranger merely for the sake of doing something good for someone who is close to us, like a friend or a relative. And Pogge thinks that, by analogy, you know, we shouldn't allow ourselves to harm foreigners for the sake of securing our fellow nationals a higher standard of living. So, I mean, these are essentially, you know, his two main claims in favor of the conclusion that we have a very strong obligation of justice to eradicate poverty worldwide.
Okay, could you explain a bit more? What role does it play in his argument that he thinks that we have harmed those people who are impoverished?
I mean, it plays an absolutely central role, and it's also a very interesting role. I mean, the overwhelming majority of moral and political philosophers who think that we have that obligation couch it in terms of positive rights. Now, a positive right is the right that we have against someone else, that person actually helps us. They are contrasted with negative rights, which are rights that we have against others, that they do not harm us. Now, Pogge is aware, of course, that in standard classical liberal thought, people are very sympathetic to the idea that we shouldn't harm one another, but much less sympathetic to the idea that we should help one another. So he thinks that his case for the eradication of worldwide poverty will be made stronger if we argue for it from the point of view of negative rights. So to put the point slightly differently, he's saying to his opponent, okay, you don't accept positive rights, that's fine. I'm going to show you that even on a more minimalist understanding of our obligations towards one another, whereby we only have an obligation not to harm, well, we still have a strong duty to ensure that poverty is eradicated worldwide. So that puts him in a very strong rhetorical position, if you want, against those who don't think that we have such an obligation.
Could you say more about why he thinks that we have, in fact, harmed people? Because that seems to me to be incredibly crucial for his account, that a lot of people would say, well, if we've harmed them, then we have an obligation, but they would be suspicious of the claim that we have, in fact, harmed them.
Absolutely. So at this point, you know, his argument is factual, you know, more than anything else. So he analyzes, you know, policies conducted, for example, by international institutions such as the IMF, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, the European Union as well. So examples of such policies are, for example, we impose, you know, very high tariffs on imported goods from third world countries, in particular foodstuff. But on the other hand, we demand, you know, of those countries that they open up their internal markets to our own goods. So we prevent farmers from several countries from having access to our market, and we impose, you know, them the opening of our own. Sorry, we impose on them, you know, the exportation of our own products. We also, you know, make it quite attractive for potential dictators, for example, to take over power in a given country by giving them a number of borrowing privileges. And we do that because financially it's advantageous for us to do so. And we consistently refuse to raise our own taxes, you know, for the sake of protecting individuals in third world countries from the consequences of the policies led by the World Bank, the IMF, and so on. So these are the facts that, you know, he adduces in support of this claim that we do actually harm, you know, the poor in third world countries.
Well, I can imagine someone hearing that would say, you know, that there are two locutions you use there. You said that we impose these trade restrictions on poor countries, and we come up with policies that make it attractive for dictators to take over such countries. The average person listening might say, well, wait a minute, who is this we? I mean, we don't do any of these things. We're simply individuals who are citizens of the United States or the citizens of Great Britain or citizens of France or Germany. What sort of responsibility does that give to us as individual citizens?
Well, the crucial point for him is that we, after all, are citizens of democratic countries. So, you know, we have some leeway, he believes, and argues on what our governments actually seek to do. Now, of course, you know, his claim is not that we each individually, you know, are responsible for what happens in third world countries. I mean, that would be a very naive, you know, claim, and he doesn't make it. But he instead invokes the idea of a collective responsibility, if you want, and that cashes out in terms of us being, you know, complicitous in what these institutions actually do. So, I mean, I'm not saying that he's right, but that really, you know, is the structure of his argument.
Well, in fact, and certainly in the last half of the show, I want to come back and talk about your critical assessment of what he wants to say.
Right.
Didn't want to ask one other question, though. The idea that the wrong here, in some sense, is being done by large institutions and, in particular, by governments, is deeply connected with his view of human rights. And perhaps
That's
it would
right.
be worthwhile talking a little bit about what that conception of human rights is and the ways in which it might differ from more familiar or ordinary conceptions.
I think that's a good point. I mean, he has a very idiosyncratic understanding of human rights. I mean, to say that I have a human right to something, you know, for example, to freedom of speech, means that I have a claim against institutions, so more specifically against agents in those institutions or against people who support those institutions, that they let me speak, for example, if the right in question is the right to freedom of speech. Now, it's idiosyncratic because it restricts human rights to rights that we have against institutions, their agents, and supporters. And some philosophers have a much broader understanding of human rights, whereby, you know, we can have human rights against private individuals, not against agents in institutions, but against private individuals. And I think the reason why Poggi has that understanding of human rights is because he's very reluctant to endorse the view that we, every single one of us, have a positive duty to help other people in third world countries. The onus is not on us in our private capacity. It's on us as citizens of democratically elected, governments to actually eradicate poverty worldwide. So the we in, the various statements which I have given, in fact, does mean we as participants in institutions. It doesn't mean we individuals.
Now, would it be fair to say then that this conception of human rights does not lessen our responsibility or obligation, though it perhaps does change it. It changes what we need to be doing in order to fulfill our responsibilities to justice.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't make it less strong, but it does change its content. So, for example, if I fail to give some money every month to Oxfam, or the Red Cross, I don't violate any human right of anyone in a third world country. But if, by contrast, I decide not to vote for a political party which advocates the Tobin tax, which is a redistribution tax, then I do violate human rights of the impoverished in third world countries. Now, I have asked, he doesn't deny that we may have a moral duty, to give something to Oxfam. I think he would say that's a good thing. In fact, he might even say that's a moral obligation. but it's not the same kind of obligation, as an obligation to vote, for political parties, which will actually, seek to eradicate poverty worldwide.
Is it just voting, or do we have some sort of stronger obligation to try to work to get candidates nominated by parties who will take a particular position, or that we need to be working to educate other people about the plight of the impoverished in the world? Are those part of the obligation as well?
Yes, I think they are. I mean, he's not very explicit, on that point, but I think he would be committed to saying, for example, that, as a community, we must make sure in schools, for example, that, children are knowledgeable about the plight of the poor in third world countries. So I think he would be very open to, not simply talk about that obligation in terms of voting or electing parties, but, couch it in broader terms. And certainly, when his argument applies to elected officials, then they have a strong obligation of justice to ensure that, the trade agreements they negotiate, for example, with third world countries actually are fair agreements between us and them.
So to that extent, his position is really very unusual. It's unusual in two different ways. It's unusual because he says that we collectively harm the individuals who are impoverished in the world.
That's right.
For that reason alone, we have an obligation to do something to remedy the harm, but also that he focuses on political and educational efforts as much as, if not more than, direct contributions.
I think that's absolutely right. At least direct contributions from you and me as private individuals and potential, donors to charities. He does, advocate what he calls a global resource dividend, which in effect is a tax which countries would have to pay to a global fund, and that tax would represent a share of the value of the natural resources they use or sell or simply waste through disuse or pollution. So, he clearly doesn't overlook the importance of transfers of material resources. But again, whereas most advocates of such obligations at global level, would focus on those transfers of material resources. I mean, for him, it's not the end of the story. It's only one half of the story. And the other half of that story is our political behavior as citizens and as government officials.
All right, in the second half of the interview, I'd like to talk more about your evaluation of his arguments, places
right.
you might want to supplement or to detract from it. This is Hugh LaFollette on Ideas and Issues. My guest today is Cécile Fabre, professor of government at the London School of Economics, and we're discussing Thomas Poggi's book, World Poverty in human rights. Now, do you think, I mean, let's go back to this first point. Do you think he has given good reason to think that people in affluent nations, people like yourself and myself, have in fact, well, at least the governments and the agents of ours, have in fact harmed the impoverished of the world?
Well, I mean, I very much sympathize, you know, with his, you know, diagnosis, if you want, of the situation. I mean, I think it is hard to deny that, you know, the terms imposed by the World Bank and the IMF, for example, are unfair, you know, to the poorest in developed countries. So I don't have any issue with, you know, the factual basis of his argument. And I don't take issue either with his conclusion, namely that, you know, we have a strong obligation of justice to eradicate poverty worldwide. But I think there are a number of problems with the way he defends that conclusion. And the first set of problems, you know, has to do with his appeal to the idea of negative rights. So, you know, briefly to remind you, he appeals to negative rights because he thinks that his case is more powerful if we can make it rest solely on the claim that we have harmed people in third world countries. The problem here is that if you couch the case for global economic justice in terms of negative rights, you do, in fact, too much and at the same time too little. I mean, you do too much because if a negative duty not to harm someone is accompanied by a duty to offer compensation for the harm we inflict, and that's what Pugge says, then in fact it is likely that we owe much more to the world's poor than to alleviate their poverty. I mean, it's likely that in imposing unfair terms of trade and agreements and so on, in taking away natural resources from them, in polluting their own environment, we are in fact doing much more than making them very poor. In other words, if we had behaved differently in the past, it could very well be that the difference between our standard of living and their standard of living would have been fairly narrow, or at least much more narrow than the differences that exist between us and people who are no longer poor. In other words, we may owe them to reduce to a very large extent, above the poverty threshold, the inequalities that exist between us and them. So to recap here, if you go with negative rights, it won't get you to the conclusion that all we owe these people is to make sure that their basic needs are met. In fact, negative rights will get us much further than that, and I'm not quite sure that Pugge is willing to embrace that conclusion.
What about you? Are you willing to embrace the conclusion that
I think we have more extensive duties to the world poor. I actually don't think that, you know, we have to avoid, you know, the strategy of positive rights. I mean, you know, I think we can make a case for global economic justice, which both unequivocally appeals to the existence of a right to help one another, a duty to help one another, which is a positive duty, and which is also more demanding than simply ensuring that the poor worldwide have their basic needs met. But, you know, if I may carry on, as you asked, with, you know, my critical evaluation of negative rights. I mean,
sure.
I said earlier that on the one hand they do too much, and I've explained why, but I think on the other hand they do too little. I mean, you know, suppose that we do manage to eradicate poverty worldwide, and Pugge himself thinks that we can. I mean, presumably, though, we should ensure that the world remains just, that is, we should ensure that no one falls below the poverty line again and that no newborn individual ever lives under it. Now, that, if anything, is a positive duty to do something. It's not a negative duty not to harm someone. And so, you know, on that count, you know, negative rights will not get you to the conclusion that Pugge wants. He doesn't want us simply to eradicate poverty now. You know, he wants to make sure that, you know, there is no longer any poverty in the world for generations to come. So those, you know, since you asked, are my main, you know, queries, if you want, about the structure of his argument.
Mitch, eventually I may want to go back and ask a little bit more about the first one. But on the second one, I'm wondering if Pogge's answer wouldn't be something like this, that once we get to a place where there's no longer impoverished. Once we stop supporting institutions which do harm people, then people won't be harmed, and there won't end up being this gap. That is, I think he believes that whatever gap there is wholly caused by unjust institutions. And if we simply eradicate the unjust institutions, then everyone will continue to be well taken care of. That may be false, but I'm guessing that's what he would want to say.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is what he would say. But it's not enough simply to eradicate unjust institutions. I mean, you have to, set in place just institutions. For example, if a global resource dividend, this tax which I mentioned earlier on, is one of the ways in which, we can ensure, for example, that countries do not misuse or, missell or waste their natural resources, then we will have to set up an international institution which will be able to collect, this tax and to distribute its proceeds to individuals in, countries which don't have access to natural resources. To support such an institution, if it is a requirement of justice, is a positive requirement to do something for other people. It no longer is a requirement not to harm them or a requirement to compensate them for the harm we inflicted on them in the past. At least that's, my view.
Okay. Let's pursue the other part of that, though. The idea that we do have a positive obligation to people. I take it you do think we have an obligation, positive obligation, as well as the negative obligation that Pogge talks about. Could you give the listener a brief sense of why you think we do have that sort of obligation?
Sure. I actually think it's, one of the most difficult things to argue for in moral and political philosophy. And in my view, the best way to go about defending it is to take as a starting point the fact that we have negative obligations to others. So for example, we have an obligation not to kill them arbitrarily, not to harm them, not to cause them unnecessary suffering, and so on. Now, one way to get positive obligations from that is to say the following. Well, look, the values such as autonomy, individual freedom, respect for others, and so on, from which negative obligations are derived, those very values may well dictate in favor of a positive duty to help someone. So if, for example, the reason why you think that we ought not to kill someone arbitrarily is because we ought to attach respect to human life, well, by the same token, respect for human life may well dictate that we have a positive obligation to help ensure that people don't starve to death. So that would be, in a rough and ready way, the line of argument I would pursue in order to defend the idea of positive duties. Now, of course, that's not enough to justify, an obligation to remedy poverty worldwide. I mean, some people would agree that we have positive duties to help, but they would say that we have that positive duty to help only when the recipient of that duty is a fellow national. So in order to define a positive obligation to eradicate poverty worldwide, you need to explain why the scope of that obligation extends beyond borders. And Pogge has an argument for that. As I said earlier on, his argument is based on an analogy, between what we think we owe to our family and friends in relation to strangers. And he thinks that, if it is clear that, we have an obligation not to harm someone, for the sake of helping a family member, then by the same token, we can't make such sharp differences between what we owe foreigners and what we owe fellow nationals.
Okay, let's talk a little bit. We've got about 5 minutes left. I wonder if we can talk about each of those elements a bit more. I take it the general argument, again, the sort of schematic of the argument, is that if we think life is important, sufficiently important to say that someone shouldn't take it away arbitrarily by killing me, for instance, then we also ought to say it's important enough that we should be willing to give someone help in order to make sure that they stay alive. That's the basic idea, correct?
It is. I mean, there are qualifications, but it is the basic idea.
Okay. So the second part then is really what's perhaps most contentious in some ways, and that is what is the scope of this obligation? Most people think that we have sort of a very strong obligation to friends and family, perhaps a somewhat weaker obligation to the other citizens in our country or our states or our provinces, and maybe some obligations, but certainly much weaker when it comes to people outside our own country.
That's right.
What could you say a little bit about why you have misgivings about that way of understanding our moral responsibilities?
You mean about the second point in particular,
yes,
the extension
yes. mm-hmm.
worldwide? Well, you see, I mean, there would be something extraordinarily arbitrary, you know, in the view that someone's life, literally, someone's prospects for minimal a decent life, you know, will depend on whether or not he happens to be, you know, a fellow national with someone who can help him. I mean, imagine you stand on the beach and you have a choice between saving one of two individuals who are drowning. You know, one of them is a national of your own country, the other one isn't. You personally know neither. So the only relevant difference between the two of them is that, you know, one belongs to the same country as you do, the other one doesn't. Now, when I put that scenario in such a stark way, you know, to people, I cannot think of any one of them who would say that they have a strong moral obligation to save their fellow national above, you know, the other person. So in that very stark scenario, people, most people don't believe that that the recipient of our obligation is actually the one to whom we have that link. And if they are correct, or rather if they think that, then I do not see how they can say the contrary when what is at issue is whether or not we send aid, for example, or help in the development of people in third world countries.
It seems to me what your example shows then is that, that people assume that the reason that they may have for aiding a fellow national is in fact that it's going to be easier to aid a fellow national. Whereas your example shows what happens when it's not easier to save a fellow national, when it's as easy to save someone elsewhere in the world.
Right. Well, I think that I mean, I think you're right. You know, some people, you know, would make that claim, the easiness claim. Now, if they make that claim, well, for a start, I mean, I'm not sure that it is always easier to help people who belong to our own country, you know, than it is to help people in other countries. I mean, it is true that, you know, the delivery of aid, for example, to third world countries is very often hampered, you know, by corrupt officials and so on in those countries. But a case would have to be made as to why aid couldn't be delivered, you know, in some other and easier ways. But also, if this is the reason why, you know, according to some people, you know, we ought to focus on what happens at home as opposed to what happens abroad, then I think, you know, it's still a victory, an important moral victory, you know, for the advocates of global justice. Because then the opponent of global justice isn't making a moral argument, you know, for giving priority to people who are close to us. It's just a practical argument. Now, it may not seem very much, but I think it is actually, you know, quite a lot, really. If we can already get people to see that, you know, there is something morally problematic, deeply morally problematic, you know, in focusing on fellow nationals as opposed to foreigners, then I think we've done, you know, the hardest part of the job, really.
Well, I hate to say it, but we are out of time. I appreciate very much your appearing on the show today.
All right, thank you.
I've been speaking to Cecile Fabre, Professor of Government at the London School of Economics. We've been discussing Thomas Pugge's World Poverty and Human Rights. This is Hugh LaFollette, Friday's and Issues. Good day.